Channel open. Welcome back to Weekly Trek, a proud member of the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network and presented in partnership with TrekCore.com. I am your host, Alex Perry.
What's today's date? The date.
Today's show is recorded on July 17th, 2022, and is current through Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 1, so beware of spoilers. All right, let's get into the show.
Good day, Voyager, and welcome to A Briefing with Neelix. Catchy title, isn't it?
Weekly Trek is a regular news show covering the biggest stories from the Star Trek franchise. We are in a new golden age of Star Trek. There are 5 television shows in production, possibly more on the way, and enough merchandise to fill the Bajoran wormhole. So stick with me and I'll help you sort the real facts from a lot of the Dominion propaganda that you'll find online. But I can't do this alone. And my guest this week is returning guest and co-host of the First Flight podcast right here on the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network. It's Abby Summer. Abby, welcome back to Weekly Trek.
Hi, Alex. It's so nice to be with you again. Always fun to chat Trek.
All right, Abby. Well, you know the drill. I want to know something that's got you excited about Star Trek at the moment. What's got you moving at Warp 10?
All right. So anyone who's listened to me talk Trek knows I have a couple things that I really enjoy. And the one that has been making me happy with this whole summer has been Star Trek food. Because there have just been so many examples, Strange New Worlds specifically, of Star Trek food. And I love Star Trek food. It's so interesting. It's so different, but it's something that they have to make it look a little bit more modern. And it's fun for me to see them like do the giant pan-ins on Pike's table in his quarters. And there's all the weird fruit they use, the dragon fruits, the rambutans, the, you know, all those Asian ones, the Buddha's hands. And then there's always the kiwi and the strawberry that takes us right back to 2 days and 2 nights in Enterprise. But what a cool thing to see all the food. I mean, even Discovery did it. Saru's Big Table, Lower Decks does it. Food is a communal thing. And I love that Star Trek is using the dinner table or the lunch table or the mess hall as a place to get plot exposition going, to get stories going for character moments. And the fact that Pike feeds his people in Strange New Worlds regularly, not just the senior staff, but everybody gets to come to Pike's quarters. That is so nurturing in such a nice way. And it gives you those vibes of Sisko when he was cooking with his family. It goes back to Enterprise where, you know, there is more food in Enterprise than anywhere else. And it just makes me happy to see that food is being shown as something that brings people together in the future as well as now.
Yeah, it's really terrific. And it's so funny because obviously you're a huge Enterprise fan. And, you know, that's a big component of the Enterprise show, at least in its first couple of seasons, is the use of food and eating scenes as like a way of, you know, they didn't have a sort of a traditional conference room. And so lots of those scenes would happen in the captain's mess. And since they were in the captain's mess, that means it had to have been mealtime. So there was a lot of food taking place. So yeah, I love that. And, you know, it's funny, being released in September is the, I guess, I think this is technically the second edition of the Star Trek cookbook. I say that it's definitely the second Star Trek cookbook. There was one in the late 90s, maybe early 2000s that was sort of, it was a Star Trek cookbook and it had a picture of Neelix on the front. Yep. It was like, it was, you know, like Neelix's cookbook that he did after Voyager returned to the Alpha Quadrant. And there's a new one coming in September by one of the New York Times food critics. And it makes reference to the existence of the first one. So that's why I'm sort of saying it's a second edition, though. I don't know if any of the recipes will be the same or if they're all new recipes within the second book. But, you know, it's funny that there is this sort of long history and association between Star Trek and food. So I do really like that Strange New Worlds is sort of continuing to push forward with that.
I really hope Pike's omelet recipe is in there, because that seemed like, I mean, if it could make La'an stop and go, oh, this is delicious, then I would like to make that omelet. And I think this is something that I've been thinking of recently too, because Dorothy Deuter, who was the food stylist on Enterprise, just passed the beginning of this month. Very and sad. There's been some lovely tributes to her. So the Star Trek food has been close to the top of my mind. And it's just, it's nice to see it. I mean, I show people I care about them by bringing food. So it's nice to see that that is a human trait that continues on.
All right, let me tell you what I'm feeling good about Star Trek this week, which is that just yesterday, I was at the Shore Leave Convention just outside of Baltimore here in Maryland, which is a fan-run convention that has been going on for like 2 decades now. I think the first one they did was in the early 90s. Every year, pandemics excluded since then. And I had a tremendous time, had a pretty perfect day with some friends, and we all had a wonderful time. But the thing that I like most about the Shore Leave Convention is that because it's a fan-run convention that was set up in the early 90s, like, you really do feel like the moment you step foot into the hotel that it takes place in, which is a little bit of like a, I would not say the hotel is run down, but I would just say it is from a different era.
Yes.
You feel like you're stepping through a time warp and into like a classic 1990s Star Trek convention, which is my favorite thing in the world because I never got to go to a 1990s Star Trek convention here in the US. I didn't even get to go to one in the UK, largely because in the year 2000, I was 13. So, right. You know, I mean, it was not like, it was not super on the cards for me in 1990 when I was 3 years old for me to go to a Star Trek convention. So it's so nice to have the opportunity to experience something like that today, a vendor's room that actually, you know, for a small fan-run convention has quite a nice vendors room with lots of different vendors, many of whom are selling some of just, you know, the 90s greatest hits in terms of Star Trek merchandise, all very reasonably priced, I thought. Just the vibe of it, the way the autographs are done, the photos, the main panels, they're just so delightful. And it's just, you know, it's so nice when these things are fan run. I mean, of course, it means there's, you know, not sort of a high level of bells and whistles associated with the convention, but that's fine. As long as you go in expecting a rather stripped down affair in a classic 1990s hotel, you know, with very 1990s aesthetic, and you know, carpet up the walls type thing, then you're going to have a great time. And I had a really, really terrific time yesterday. It was a fabulous, fabulous experience.
Well, as someone who did go to conventions in the 90s, I'm a tad bit older than you are. I love that vibe too. And I love sinking into that old school thing. And polished conventions are great, but those old ones, I mean, it was just full of the people who were there because they loved Star Trek, which right. All of them are. But when you really will go to a convention that is not the polished convention, you're there because you're hardcore. And that's the fun of the conventions, is just feeling like you're with your people. So I'm really envious. I was living vicariously through all the tweets of everybody who was there yesterday.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. All right. Well, with that, let's turn to the week's top stories.
There's a war going on, and I'm a reporter.
Well, never fear, Star Trek fans who have now gone one Thursday without Star Trek for the first time in 48 weeks, our next Star Trek fix is just a little over 1 month away. Star Trek Lower Decks Season 3 will premiere on Paramount Plus in the US on Thursday, August the 25th, followed, we assume, on Amazon Prime internationally the next day, as it has the last two seasons. That is only 5.5 weeks away from the date this episode drops, which is not long to wait given we just had 48 weeks of new Star Trek, and as we discussed on this show last week, Season 3 of Lower Decks may herald the next 50 weeks of new Star Trek, given everything that is being shot right now. In addition to the release date, Paramount have also revealed the key art for Lower Decks Season 3, as expected, where the Season 1 and 2 key art took inspiration from the first two Star Trek movies. Season 3's inspiration is drawn from Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock. On the Ready Room episode attached to A Quality of Mercy, an exclusive clip of Lower Decks Season 3 also aired, which appears to be from very early in the season premiere and finds Boimler back on Earth at his family's raisin farm. Abby, are you excited for the Season 3 premiere of Star Trek Lower Decks?
Lower Decks, Lower Decks, Lower Decks. I remember sitting next to you at the panel for this in Chicago and just the pure joy that was there. I think this might be tied with the Strange New Worlds premiere for me for what I am most excited about in new Star Trek this year, because Lower Decks is just summer. Lower Decks is fun. Lower Decks is, we've said it all before, it's wonderful. And all the little bits and teasers and trailers and posters just make me want it more. And I have to say, while I did completely lose track of what day of the week it was because there was no Thursday Star Trek this week, I think I can handle 5 weeks if this does herald that new beginning. And I really kind of like the later August premiere. I'm a school teacher, and this is going to give me something for the beginning of the school year. My first 10 weeks of school, I'm going to have Lower Decks in it. And that's going to make going through those first hard parts of the year so much easier and so much better. And I can't wait. I just can't wait. I want all my favorite characters back. And hey, Peanut Hamper's on our poster, so we know she's making a return.
Yeah, I'm thrilled and really excited for this one. I'm a huge fan of Lower Decks. I'm the guy who does the Trek Core reviews for Star Trek Lower Decks. So I've got some work to do over 10 weeks beginning on August the 25th, but it's a delightful, delightful show. I love it so much. I'm really excited for all the possible places that it could take us. Season one was great. Season two kind of blew that out of the water and like went deeper and further and more aggressively into the Star Trek canon than I think any of us even, you know, would have hoped or expected from season two. And from all the teasers we've gotten for season three so far, it feels like the same will be true of season three as well, which is just really, really exciting. I can't wait for this to finally come back. And is there anything, Abby, that you think you like? Is there anything you think you might want to see in season three of Lower Decks?
There's a lot I want to see, but I think what Lower Decks has done that has really made me the happiest is I love the really surprise, obscure cameos that they've been pulling, you know, just characters who are in one, maybe two episodes and they just kind of flesh them out or they throw them in somewhere and you're just like, hey, wait. Oh, that's amazing. And I think I'm going to say probably 10 times today that we can just feel how much right now Star Trek is being made by people who love and know Star Trek.
Yeah.
And they put so much in Lower Decks episodes for those of us who are like that. And that's what I want. All those little things that, you know, I watch with my husband, who loves it, but he's not the kind of deep nerd that I am with Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And I'm shrieking and gasping and he's just shaking his head at me. But that's what I want. I want something that I would never have expected that totally surprises me and makes me go, oh, I didn't know I needed that, but I'm so glad we have it.
Yeah, I want something that shocks and delights me in the same way as the Sonia Gomez cameo from the season two finale, right? Just like a character that you'd sort of forgotten about, but then you were like, oh, actually, I did really want to know what ended up happening to this character. And I particularly love that they sort of picked a character who, when we last met them, was on the Lower Decks and is not anymore. So like, you know, if that became a recurring theme for the rest of the show, you know, make me perfectly happy to kind of see some of those junior Starfleet officers who have been on the other Berman era shows now, see them later in their career and what they're ultimately like.
Captain Robin Leffler, anybody?
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, yeah, Robin Leffler, you know, there's a bunch of different characters, you know, and reach into just like a really obscure one, right? Like, and of course, because I'm asking for something really obscure and my mind is blanking on possibilities right now. But hey, I mean, if there's anybody who's going to figure out how to do this and continue to surprise the fans and continue to level up the show, it's Mike McMahon and the team behind Lower Decks. So yeah, really, really thrilled that this is going to kick off the sort of next phase of new Star Trek and yeah, give us something, you know, really fun to look forward to.
And you better get your notebook ready to be writing down all of those little references for your reviews, because I have a feeling you're going to be very busy.
Oh yes, I think you are probably right about that. Our wrap-up coverage from Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 1 continues with an interview in Esquire conducted by Ryan Britt with Captain Pike actor Anson Mount. In it, as we were just talking about a few minutes ago, Strange New Worlds co-showrunner Akiva Goldsman reveals that Pike's love of cooking and the food preparation scenes dotted throughout Season 1 were written to reflect Anson Mount's personality. Anson started talking to us about how he creates consensus in his life over cooking, Goldsman said. So we instantly knew what to do with his quarters. In the same way, in a deeper and longer sense, there's this interchangeability between Patrick Stewart and Jean-Luc Picard. The same thing is happening pretty quickly with Anson. He is Pike. We write toward Anson now. And of his performance in A Quality of Mercy as his alternate future self, Anson Mount said, quote, "Mostly I didn't want to overdo it, because if you talk to most people who are in their 70s and 80s, they will tell you they still feel like they're in their 30s, other than a few kinks here and there. For whatever reason, I'm what they call an outside-in actor. I started start with the body. I just wanted to find the places where the movement was not as easy as and the voice was different. It was necessary to differentiate it a bit because I had scenes with myself. It was just necessary for the clarity of the scene. I wanted a voice that sounded like it had given up a little bit after lots of emotional turmoil. So I thought, what would my voice sound like if I had spent a lot of time sobbing and screaming? Anson also talked about the scene at the end of the episode where Pike talks to alternate future Kirk before transitioning back to his own time. Quote, I really love the scene because it was so well written. The writers know where to trust that the audience can do its own work. They don't have to overtly say Pike gets it or is told that Jim should have been in the chair and he's going to end up becoming the captain of the Enterprise. It's just simple. Tell me about yourself. That conveys everything we need to know. Pike understands that his older self wasn't just showing him he's the wrong guy in the wrong place. It's also about showing him who the right guy would be. Pike is thinking, if this guy is going to carry on my legacy, if he's going to take on my baby, I want to know something about him and see what's beyond the bluster. And what can we expect from Captain Christopher Pike in season two? I would say he's more resolute after the finale of season one, Mount said. He tried out the idea of having his cake and eating it too. It didn't work. And strangely, when he realizes there's no honorable way out, that's a relief. The older Pike made it very clear. You still have a choice. But to somebody like Pike, it isn't a choice. So this is a choice that almost makes itself, and it is a tremendous relief. He doesn't have to worry about it anymore. His job now is to make every day count as much as possible. There's a lot of freedom in that. Abby, what did you think of Anson Mount's performance as Christopher Pike in season one of Star Trek Strange New Worlds?
He is absolutely the perfect person to be helming this show. He loves Star Trek. He loves his job. And he seems like the most glorious person outside of work as well. Every time I've seen him interviewed, every time I've listened to him, everything I learn about him, I would like to have dinner with this guy. I would probably be an absolute blubbering fool who couldn't talk, but I would like to do it because he just seems like he's so grounded and he's so focused. And I like how he talks about, you know, being a new father and how that's changed his perspective. And the part of this that really resonated with me outside of the food, which is, yep, we're on the same page here. I do the same thing, was how he was talking about how figuring out that he didn't really have a choice, that he can't really keep himself out of the chair was a relief to him. Because I know what it feels like to have like that niggling anxiety, that creeping fear of something that's coming towards you. And how much has he thought about this and shown this in his performance and expounded upon why he's doing what he's doing and how it's going to change into season two? I just think it's going to be interesting to watch him know that he can't avoid it, but he also knows that he's not dying until then. So what an interesting way to go through and to make everything count in season two. I can't wait to see what they do in season two.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it goes without saying, obviously, incredibly excited for season two of Strange New Worlds. And I sort of have noticed that thing that Akiva Goldsman said about how they have started writing the character of Pike more to Anson Mount's personality and who he is, which I actually think works really well because Anson Mount seems a bit like, you know, he's sort of got like a Starfleet captain style personality.
Yes.
Very strongly principled, like bit of an outdoorsman, you know, has that sort of rugged frontiersman like sort of aura and ethos to him, but also very straight laced, right? Like clearly not a bad boy, you know, plays by the rules. And like, yeah, that sounds like Christopher Pike to me, right? Like, you know, I can work with that. And if it helps deliver a stronger performance to write to the man's innate personality, then even better. And, you know, we've only had 10 episodes of Pike leading this show. We had him in season two of Discovery as well, but it was not his show when he was on Discovery. You know, I think there are lots of people who very rightly feel that Mount is sort of moving up that list of their favorite Star Trek captains and that Pike is moving up that list of their favorite Star Trek captains, and completely understandable, right? Like A Quality of Mercy sort of demonstrates that the captains are not interchangeable. And anytime there's ever been a build your perfect crew panel, that fact comes up that like the captain that you pick determines the kinds of missions that you're going to be really good at versus the ones that maybe you're not going to be. And then you need to sort of balance that captain's personality with the different personalities of the various first officers. And that might be different depending on who that captain is. But having said that, you know, like Pike is a great captain for all kinds of different scenarios, apparently just not Balance of Terror. And, you know, it sort of is really worthy of that kind of title. And I did really like the way that Anson talked about the sort of different way he had approached doing the older version of the character. Yes. I like the fact that they did not really do much old age makeup, right? It wasn't sort of like All Good Things style or The Visitor style old age makeup, right, which seems great at the time. But then once the actors start to actually age and you compare them to what the old age makeup was, it never matches up anywhere close, right? Like they always look way better than they do in the old age makeup. So I like the fact that they sort of just put some like shadows on his face. And
well, they gave him some wear lines too.
Yeah,
you know,
right,
he's been through a lot. And I like how he talked about the physicality, the voice, all of it. And that is wearing, but it's not that long of a time either. It's what, 7.5 years-ish?
Yeah.
So he wouldn't look ancient like
right
that. And so I loved the subtlety. And I really think it's interesting. I always think about what I would say to my former self. And I loved the scene when he was talking to his younger self to prove that he was really who he was. Like everybody needs one of those. And the playing of those two Pikes together showed the differences immediately and subtly. And I really appreciated both of Anson Mount's performances at that point in particular, because of course, no, he's not going to just say, oh, you're old me. Okay, I'm going to think of everything. And he says that out loud. He's like, no,
yeah,
we've seen this show before. So I thought that was really well done. And I can't even imagine how hard it is to act against yourself, even if you have a stand-in or someone reading the lines or something. So bravo for that last episode. That was a masterclass in subtle facial acting with yourself.
Totally. And it's still sitting with me, A Quality of Mercy. And it's not losing any steam in terms of, you know, my belief that it's the best episode of Star Trek since the franchise returned in 2017. I don't feel myself starting to back away from that as, you know, sort of recency bias starts right to wear off. I genuinely do think it's a really terrific episode of Star Trek. And, you know, if season two has more of that kind of storytelling in store, you know, it's going to be even better than season one.
We can only be so lucky.
We certainly can. Well, Star Trek Strange New Worlds showrunner Henry Alonzo Myers has continued to be on the interview circuit this past week and dropped additional hints about what to expect from Star Trek Strange New Worlds' second season, which finished filming a couple of weeks ago. Speaking generally about season two, Alonzo Myers said in an interview with The Hollywood Reporter that, quote, I feel the job of this show is to take big swings. And by the way, season one will look like a lot of bunting compared to season two. Star Trek is, in my view, most useful when it is emotionally connecting, which includes joy, wonder, and sentiment. I think big swings are how you get there. And by the way, big swings just means not as expected. A big swing can be small. It can be a small story. So when we say big swings, I think we mean atypical. And to Variety, he talked a little bit about what to expect from James T. Kirk's appearances in season two. Quote, the Kirk that we're going to meet in season two is a lieutenant who is on his way to becoming a first officer in the fleet. He is not yet the person we've come to know, to the same extent that Uhura and Spock and Chapel are not yet the people that we come to know on the original series. There's still some growth and things that he's going through that we want to explore. He also told Inverse that we should expect to see more legacy characters in season two of Strange New Worlds, and to Cinema Blend talked about how that was baked into the DNA of the show. And about the long-rumored possibility of a crossover with one of the other Star Trek shows, Alonzo Myers said, quote, I will only say this. We all love the idea of crossovers, so when and if they materialize is still in the air, but we're looking really hard and we might be able to say yes to that question really soon. At least that's my hope. Alonzo Myers also talked about the possibility of a Strange New Worlds season three. Quote, we don't have a pickup for season three. We are planning on it, he said. The nature of these shows is you just have to plan way, way, way ahead. In order to get the scripts done and to build our sets and AR assets that live up to achieve here on Star Trek Strange New Worlds, it just requires a lot of lead time. We are in early discussions about it. It's definitely the next thing in line. These are the conversations we're having. Abby, we've obviously talked about how we're excited for Star Trek Strange New Worlds season two, but anything you hear there specifically from Henry Alonzo Myers that's got you really looking forward to it?
Yeah, there's a couple things. One, I love how they said that big swings don't have to be big stories, because I always find that the stories that I go back to in Star Trek the most for me are the ones that hit me in the feels. And those are oftentimes much smaller stories. They're oftentimes bottle shows even. It's about development of a character. It's looking into their heads and doing something different. They said that it's unexpected. Bring it on. Like every big swing they took in season one, I loved. Even the, you know, the horror episode with the Gorn, not so much my my thing, but I appreciate the way it was done. I appreciate all of that. So if we're taking more big swings, let's do it.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking a big swing maybe goes with the crossover here. Could we be looking at possibly Lower Decks doing a Strange New Worlds episode the way that we had the Enterprise finale with TNG? Like if Mariner goes in the holodeck and plays an episode, we're not necessarily saying that it has to be, you know, live action goes to live action, animated goes to animated. That could be really fun. Like go in and play a Strange New Worlds mission and they all just get to come and do the voice acting. And I could see that they obviously can do the comedy, as we've seen this season. So that could be a really fun way to do an unexpected crossover there, whether it be in Lower Decks or Strange New Worlds, or if maybe they overlap and they have one episode that's the beginning of one, the end of another. There are so many possibilities. And if they're thinking outside the box, that makes it an even broader canvas to paint on.
Yeah, personally, I'm still pulling for a Who Framed Roger Rabbit style version of a crossover between Strange New Worlds and Star Trek Lower Decks. That's my my sort of sense of it is, hey, you're almost at 900 episodes of Star Trek, and you're going to be over 900 episodes of Star Trek with everything that has already been committed to in these new seasons. We could do one episode that's like completely wacky and off the wall. That's why I also say, let's do a musical episode, right? Like, who cares? If you don't like it, if it's not your thing, if it's too weird and non-Star Trek-y, oh, well, then that's one episode out of a whole season, you know, a whole 900 episodes that didn't ultimately resonate and work for you. Like, that's okay. You know, just never watch that one again, right? You still, if there are 900 episodes and one of them doesn't work for you, well, then you still have 899 to watch. Go ahead and do it, you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah, like, I love the idea of them taking bigger swings. I mean, you know, they took some pretty big swings, as you say, in season one, right? The horror episode, the comedy episode, the extremely prescient, we'll kill our kids to save our society episode. Yeah. You know, like they had the rescue episode, the Starship Combat episode. You know, it was great in that regard. And the swings felt like they got a little bigger as the season went on. You know, Elysian Kingdom is a huge swing of an episode, right?
Yes.
Let's do a, you know, Renaissance Fair style, you know, fairy tale story with our Star Trek crew and spend, you know, most of the episode having them inhabit different characters and like figuring out the relationships between those characters, because they're playing people who are completely different than, you know, the characters that we know and love. So yeah, there's something really great about that sort of concept of them, you know, being much more aggressive about trying out different stories. And especially since they have kind of, you know, established their pedigree for doing good Star Trek in season one, I think that, you know, creates a fair amount of trust with the audience to then sort of promote and continue this idea of like, okay, we trust you to kind of take some of these big swings and really connect with them. I will say, I think that, you know, the comments about season three are extremely positive from the sense of there being a season three. I would not, you know, in any way sort of take Henry Alonso Myers's comments about to mean there won't be a season three. I think it means there definitely will be a season three, because they're starting to have early conversations about it now. And you wouldn't do that if your sense was that it wasn't coming. And like all of the other Star Trek shows, you know, none of them have been canceled yet. I don't know why that would be Star Trek Strange New Worlds when it's, you know, so far the most popular of all of the live action shows that have been on. So yeah, just like at this point, we're just kind of waiting around until we get to getting our season two of this show. And I'm really very excited for it to come around.
Yeah. And speaking of season two, we need to address the captain in the room of Kirk here. And I really like that they specifically point out the Kirk that we saw in season one. It's not the Kirk that we know and expect. This is a Kirk who has had a different life path. And for all the criticism I've seen of Paul Wesley, I want to say that Paul Wesley, every time I hear him talk about playing Kirk, he is so deliberate, respectful, and he's really done homework. And he has thought about this coming into this season and next season so much. You can tell that he's got little beats and little ticks that he's really focusing on. Now, I've heard people complain, well, he doesn't look like Kirk. His body type is different. You know what? Who cares? I love the fact that we have different body types of all different people, and Uhura doesn't look anything like old Uhuras, and we're all cool with that. So I think people need to realize, yes, this has been a different Kirk. He's on a different path. And just think, one different thing can completely change your life. We all as people can think back on days where we're like, I didn't realize my life was going to change today, but it did. Yep. And that has happened with Kirk. It has not gone the way that we know his past to be. So we give him grace here, and we do trust that these people have made a phenomenal season of Star Trek. And he came in one of the episodes that I think is going to be an instant classic, like 10, 15, 20, hopefully 50 years from now, we're still going to be talking about this. And his performance was part of what made that episode wonderful. I'm excited to see where he goes in the real timeline with Kirk and to see that growth and that development, because it's very obvious that the writers and the performers are very conscious of this and the legacy and the amount of critique that they could possibly do. And they're doing it as well as they can be. And I, for one, trust them to do it even better and season 2.
And lastly this week, the Star Trek franchise picked up several Emmy nominations in technical categories for Star Trek Picard and Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Star Trek Picard was nominated for the following: Outstanding Period and or Character Makeup, Outstanding Prosthetic Makeup, Outstanding Sound Editing for a Comedy or Drama Series, Outstanding Fantasy Sci-Fi Costumes, and in addition, Star Trek Strange New Worlds was nominated for Outstanding Sound Editing for a Comedy or Drama Series. Though Star Trek Discovery Season 4 and Star Trek Lower Decks Season 2 were eligible for nominations, none were received. Abby, how do you feel about Star Trek's Emmy nominations this year?
Star Trek costumes should win all the awards. Yes. And I have been yelling this for years. And just looking at all the beautiful work that goes into the detailed costumes on Star Trek, if they don't win every costuming award from now until New Trek is done, it is an absolute travesty. Now, I personally am going to say, as the costume nerd I am, that Picard would not have been the show I would have picked to feature the costumes in, but I understand why they did it. It's got, you know, a multitude of things to look at. It's got all the cool Borg Queen stuff going on. I get that. I would have preferred another one, but I will take whatever win we can get, because everybody who does costuming on Star Trek has my utmost respect and love, because every episode has something that makes me go, oh, that's so cool. So bravo to that. And the same thing with the makeup and all that. It gets better and better and better every single season. And I think that's so neat, both the prosthetics and the non-prosthetics. So they deserve it. And while I very much wish that it would be non-technical or production awards that Star Trek would get some recognition in, I also feel like a lot of times those things are glossed over as, yeah, of course Star Trek has great visuals. Of course Star Trek has great costumes and great makeup. That's what they do. Well, that's what they do. So they should be honored and awarded for all that hard work. And hopefully they'll win every single one they were nominated for. And next year, maybe the Academy will broaden their views to Star Trek being more than just technical awards.
Yeah, it's of course always wonderful to see Star Trek get any Emmy nominations. And, you know, congratulations to Strange New Worlds and to Picard for the nominations that they received this year. I mean, it's also, you know, as you say, it is sort of disappointing that there were not more and better nominations. I guess the one that really surprised me, in the sense that I was, you know, not really expecting that they would get nominations for like best shows or any of the acting or anything, just because
they never do.
Yeah, just because they never do. Not because they don't necessarily deserve it, but just because they never do. But the one that sort of surprised me was Strange New Worlds not receiving a nomination for outstanding visual effects, because, you know, I thought the effect work in Strange New Worlds was better than anything I've seen on television before. Certainly, you know, better than any of the other Star Trek shows, better than most other science fiction on television. Something about the team that is working on Strange New Worlds, they are just absolutely turning in complete rock solid, amazing work week after week after week after week. I sort of have to wonder a little bit if, I think because obviously season one of Strange New Worlds was eligible for nomination because it received one, but I wonder how many episodes were available before Emmy voters really started turning in their ballots for the nominations, because, you know, and it wrapped up a couple of weeks ago and the nominations came out last week. So maybe if there had been more time, that would have put them more in the running for that. But I guess we'll have to see for season two.
Yeah, I thought about that too. And I thought about, you know, Discovery too, when we're in But to Connect and you're seeing at Federation headquarters all those costumes going straight down. And you're thinking about the Elysian Kingdom in Strange New Worlds. And those are just jaw-dropping amazing. But you know what? Picard had, and this is so on brand for me, some of the best Star Trek knitwear that there has been on TV. And I know that a lot of those pieces were handmade. So perhaps that's why they went with that, because it's something, maybe they're hedging their bets and they're thinking that voters don't want to vote on things that are two out there. So to show them that this is, you know, a sci-fi futuristic show, but look, they're all wearing the coolest sweaters you've ever seen and wish you had in your wardrobe, might be a way to woo voters. I don't know. All I'm glad is that somebody in Star Trek got nominated for costumes, because otherwise I might have had to cry.
All right. We've talked about the facts, and now let's speculate on what's going to happen in the future of Star Trek.
You make some very good points, Captain, but it's still all speculation and theory.
So each week, my guest and I give you a wish or theory we're nurturing about any of the shows or the future of the franchise. So Abby, let's hear your theory or wish for this week.
All right. I got something I've been chewing on, and I've said a couple times and places before, but okay, I can't stop thinking about it. So we've been talking about a little here and there about the Gorn on Strange New Worlds, and they've obviously been one of the major, if not the major foe of the season. And some of it has been amazing. Some of it has been creepy. Some of it has been, I wish it would be different. And I've heard a lot of people go, oh, you know, they're, these baby Gorn are chasing them around, and it just doesn't seem to work right. And again, I'm not a huge fan of horror. But so they name dropped in Ghosts of Illyria augments. And that made me think, we've been talking about all this genetic manipulation, Una's in jail for genetic manipulation, blah, blah, blah. What if the Gorn that we are seeing on Strange New Worlds are actually Gorns experimenting with augments? It's the right time. It's the right era. The Klingons did it. Humans did it just a little bit before. We know the Gorn that are spacefaring are super, super intelligent. They're relentless. But the fact that they dropped augments when that term hasn't been used in 20 some years since Enterprise makes me know that they have it on their brain. And it would explain a lot of the things that we've seen in the Gorn this season. It explains the crazy different gestation cycles of their eggs in different creatures. If they've been tweaking with their genomes, maybe they're designed to just breed and hatch as fast as they can. When we see Gorn POV, it almost looks like technical, like night vision goggles. It looks augmented. And, you know, they only cull their youth or pick up their youth once in a while. So maybe this is them going, we're going to give you all these genetic enhancements. You're going to hatch out of whoever you hatch out of. And then we're going to come back and get who's left. You're the strongest. You have made yourself the only survivor. And then they take those stronger ones and socialize them. And, you know, this is a really good way, if that was true, if they've augmented their babies or their breeding cycle, this is a great way to really get your enemy out of there. If you can't kill them while you're hunting them or while you're on their ship or whatever, you just spit on them. And within a couple months at the longest, I'm guessing, they're going to explode with your eggs, and then you get to go take over wherever they happen to be at that time. So it's not a terrible strategy. And I think it would be really cool. I think it would explain why the Gorn we see now are different than the Gorn we see in TOS. Maybe they went too far and things got wonky, like, you know, your forehead ridges disappear for a while or something. And I know that the showrunners of this show, the writers of this show, love Trek. They love connecting things. They like filling in pieces we don't have. And I really think we're going to look back at all the Gorn stuff in this first season with a very different eye by the time we have gotten a few seasons away or their arc is done. I think they're going to develop into a really interesting villain. And I think having them be augments and explaining a lot of how they grow so quickly or so different, it could be a really neat way to honor the past of Trek and have these futuristic cool Gorn really be an enemy.
I love this theory. I love it because I think it also ties in really well with something that the show seems like they're interested in exploring further, which is, wouldn't it be so fascinating? The character of La'an has two connections, right? One to augments and one to the Gorn, and find a way to thread those two together, you know, to sort of continue to explore that in a really interesting way. So yeah, I love this theory a lot. I think they should do it. And of course, then too, you know, I mean, not that this ultimately matters all that much, but from the perspective of any fans who are struggling to reconcile the appearance and demeanor of the Gorn in Arena with the demeanance and appearance of the Gorn in All Those Who Wander, then you know, you sort of have your handy explanation as to why they're not the same thing. So yeah, hey, if it doesn't show up on screen, they should put that in a book. That sounds terrific.
Well, I think it helps that, you know, they're so relentless. The Gorn seem like the type that are going to push everything, right? So if they are doing Gorn augments, they're going to push it to the point of it being disastrous and then having to deal with the consequences. So I think it could work. And my little Enterprise heart over here just really wants it to be true.
Sure, sure. Let me tell you my theory, which is that, or I guess, I mean, it's a partial theory, partial wish. My thing is, I'm really looking forward to the Playmates figures coming soon. They were announced months ago for a summer 2022 release. It is now summer 2022. And August was the date that has been given on a lot of retailer websites for when the first wave of figures was going to be released. That's Admiral Kirk, Captain Spock, Khan from Wrath of Khan. That's Burnham and Saru from season 2 of Star Trek Discovery, and Picard, Riker, and Data from The Next Generation. So hopefully we will start to see those rolling out in the next few weeks. We've got the Prodigy figures coming not too far behind in October. And I am wondering if maybe with next week being San Diego Comic-Con, Playmates have on their Instagram feed been lightly, gently teasing that they might have something for Comic-Con next week. Who knows what that is? Is that going to be new figures? Is that going to be a look at the figures that are coming in August? I would really hope that they will have on display all of the Star Trek figures coming this year, aka the ones that I just named and the Prodigy figures. The Prodigy ones, for the live action figures, we have sort of seen a couple of in packaging shots of the actual figures, which have shown up a couple of conventions, but the Prodigy ones, we've really only just seen the prototype images. So I'd really like to see an actual picture of some of these figures. We've also not seen the Janeway yet. That one, you can pre-order it from retailers, but it does not have an image of the figure associated with it. It's just the Star Trek Prodigy logo right now. So that's one we still need to see, and one that I'm hoping that we will get maybe our first look at next week at Comic-Con. So for folks who are excited about Playmates Return to Star Trek like I am, I don't think we have too long to wait now until the first wave of figures is available. I think it's going to be a matter of, you know, maybe 4 to 6 weeks before those start shipping out to people based off of the timelines that have previously been given. Of course, with the supply chain challenges around the world, that might ultimately have slipped. But as far as we know, it has not yet slipped. And maybe we'll get a bit more information next week at San Diego Comic-Con, whether that's looks at the actual products that are going to be shipping out to people from the live action shows, a look at the actual figures from Star Trek Prodigy, so that we can compare them to the prototype images and hopefully they match up, because I thought the prototype images looked really incredible.
Yeah.
And maybe get a look at Janeway from Prodigy, the training hologram, and what that figure will look like, because I am itching to get those Prodigy figures, particularly up on my bookshelves, to be my little Prodigy entry into my little, you know, sort of menagerie of displayed Star Trek collectibles that I have going on in this room at the moment. So yeah, you know, announced early this year, I'm excited. We're finally, hopefully, just around the corner from getting some of this merchandise. And yeah, can't wait to crack them open and get them on display.
Well, you might be excited for Prodigy figures, but I'm not sure you're more excited than my two young daughters, who ask me every day when more Prodigy is coming and when the toys are coming. Because we have a friend who made us a beautiful Rock Talk and Murph who get played with constantly around here. So when I heard those were coming out, it was the immediate pre-order here, and I showed them all, and they also were very upset. Well, where's Janeway? So we are very much looking forward to that around here too, and ours will not remain pristine and unboxed. They are going to go on adventures with all the other little creatures and people that live in our house, and I cannot wait to see it. So I'm hoping, since there's an entire building wrapped with a Star Trek banner down in San Diego right now, that there's going to be a lot of good stuff that comes out of Comic-Con. And that should be one of them.
Yeah, totally agree, right? Like, Paramount seems to have laid out some money for promoting Star Trek at SDCC this year. Pictures started circulating on the internet yesterday of this giant promotional display for Star Trek that's basically being pasted to the side of one of the San Diego skyscrapers right by the convention center where San Diego Comic-Con will be taking place. And yeah, that definitely kind of, you know, whets our appetites for the 90-minute Star Trek panel, which will be taking place next weekend, which of course we'll have full coverage for here on Weekly Trek. And, you know, all of the possibilities of licensee announcements and new product looks, et cetera, for next week. So I've gone from feeling like, who knows, San Diego Comic-Con this year, maybe there won't be anything, to being like, this feels pretty big. This feels pretty, you know, major. And hopefully there'll be some interesting stuff for us to talk about on the episode next week.
Fingers crossed. Can't wait to listen.
Do you have a theory or a wish for Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, or Prodigy that you'd like to share? Tweet them to me at Weekly Trek or email them to me at weeklytrek@thetricordertransmissions.com, and I might feature your theory in a future episode. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode of Weekly Trek. Thank you so much to my guest, Abby Summer, for joining me today. Abby, how can people contact you if they want to continue the conversation?
The best place to find me personally is on Twitter, and I'm Abby M. Summer. That's S-O-M-M-E-R. And anyone who wants to hear me go on about Enterprise a little bit more, I do First Flight, which is an Enterprise rewatch podcast with my fabulous co-host, Melanie. And you can find us at First Flight Pod on all the socials.
And you can find this show on Twitter at Weekly Trek, and me at Alexander T. Perry. And if you enjoy the show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast player of choice. And please check out some of the other great shows on the Tricorder Transmissions. And if you like our shows, please also consider becoming a Patreon of Tricorder, which you can find at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And lastly, if you're looking for Star Trek news on the internet, I hope you will turn to TrekCore.com. Well, thank you, Abby. Thank you to all of my listeners. And until next week, live long and prosper.